Hello and welcome to The Bagel Bite with me, Hayden Cohen. So for this one, we're going to British politics again with ex-deputy leader of Enfield Council, Labour councillor Daniel Anderson. This episode was recorded back at Limud Festival last December, but is still incredibly relevant, probably with the exception of the occasional mention of Prime Minister Theresa May. Ah, simpler times. Before I hit play, I just wanted to say that I acknowledge that The Bagel does have rather a lot of left-leaning folk on. However, the next main episode will include the Brexit Party candidate for Salford, and basically, I'm always willing to chat with anyone and everyone as long as the conversation is respectful and challenges ideas rather than attacking people. If you're listening to this and thinking, my view as someone who is part of the Jewish community is not being represented, please do get in touch at bagelpodcast.com. I'd be genuinely honoured to hear from you. Also, if you're enjoying these episodes, they do take quite a bit of effort to produce, especially the main ones. Do share with just one friend. Go on then, two. Three if you're feeling particularly generous, and let them know about The Bagel. You can even listen on your smart speaker of choice. It works! Leave a review on iTunes or Facebook, sign up to the mailing list. These are really little things that massively help the podcast out. Which leads us nicely onto the conversation between myself and Daniel Anderson in my makeshift studio in my room at Limud Festival.
So, We've known each other, what? Well, we said now,
five years. Our five-year Facebook anniversary.
I know, how exciting.
It's so exciting.
And this is how we celebrate.
I know.
By talking at each other romantically in my room. That's what I'm doing. I'm just inviting. It's weird, right? I've just got married.
Married?
Yeah.
You did get married. I didn't know you got married.
Did you not know I just got married?
You didn't even invite me. What a friend anniversary. Some friendship that is.
It was up north. Oh. It was up north.
Oh, well, what can I say? Well, where is she?
She is not a Limudnik.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you sure she exists?
She does exist.
You just made it up.
I mean,
okay.
I've got the ring.
Well, it can be anything. You could have just got it up the back of a lorry. I don't know.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Well, what can I say? If you're waiting for the present, you might wait a while.
Said with the voice of Labour, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yes, you've been, what, a Labour Party member for how long?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. Look, I first got involved in local politics in the 90s, and I was first elected in 1998, and I served a four-year term back in those days.
Things will only get better, right?
That was the time. It was a four-year term under that on Enfield Council. And for me, it was a four-year term, and I retired after. In 2002, I walked away, and I said, never again. In fact, my joke is this. I returned in 2014 after retiring and never again. And my joke when I returned in 2014 was, it's my Sean Connery moment. Why Sean Connery? Well, because you remember he filmed Diamonds Are Forever in 1971, and he said, never again. Never again. 12 years later, he returned in Never Say Never Again. So here I was exactly 12 years later, and I said, it was my Sean Connery moment.
Nice. Nice. So why did you go back?
Well, I think the first question is, why do I quit? But to me, I was younger. We were in the leading party at the time, but it wasn't quite I had my moments in there. I was on the scrutiny system, and it were, you know, I had my moments, but frankly, I wanted to do other things with my life. And I was, not long after when I left there, I went off to Yeshiva for a time, and had slightly different experiences in my life, got on with my life in other sorts of ways. But in 2014, I started getting itchy feet and decided, well, I need to sort of focus myself, what do I really want to do? And I got back involved in the local party and thought, hey, I think I could do this again. And it was a step-by-step.
It's interesting, right? Because 2002 versus 2014, the Labour Party was pretty similar.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, yeah, fine, you'd gone Blair to Miliband right by that point. But effectively, it was pretty similar. Since 2015, the Labour Party has transmogrified. I think it'd be fair to say. Interestingly, I'd probably say that's Ed Miliband's fault. I was thinking, do I want to use the word fault? but I'm using it measuredly. So just for listeners who may not know about British politics, Ed Miliband made the decision to change Labour Party membership from, well, the people who could vote for the leader, from members to those who were £3 supporters. And so what that meant was that a lot of far left people who didn't want to spend £40 a year would have no problem spending £3 a year. Is it fair to argue that that would be the reason why Corbyn became leader or not?
Yeah, but I don't think it's totally fair to blame it all on one person, as in Ed Miliband.
It's fun though, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is. It's convenient in the same way we blame the referendum on Brexit on David Cameron. I think it's a bit more complex than all these issues. In Miliband's case, look, there was a push. It's amazing. If this would have worked out well, everyone would have said, what a brilliant idea this was, and look, if we thank Miliband, because it went horribly wrong. It's all Miliband, so what a fool, whatever. Look, the idea was to try and open up participation. It works with primaries in America and different ways of society. So they thought this would be a really good idea. But like all things, if you don't build in appropriate mechanisms to check and regulate it, then it's open for abuse. And that's what happened. No one could have foreseen or imagined, because if they would, it wouldn't have done it, right? But what happened, it opened up the doors for a number of people from far left groups to come involved, socialist workers, communist party, so forth. And they basically took control in a way, and we know what happened. You know, we had a leadership election of which there were four candidates. Everyone at the time assumed it was four candidates, Yvette Cooper, Liz Kendall, and Andy Burnham, and of course, Jeremy Corbyn, who only got on the paper because he needed about 30, I think it was 39 people to nominate him. And some of those who nominated didn't vote for him, but they thought they wanted wider choice. Well, how wrong you can be. It's always the issue here is be very careful what you do, because it could have profound consequences, which indeed it did. So he got on the ballot paper.
You know what, though? I was a Labour Party member at that point. I voted in that election. I can remember looking at all the policies, looking at voting records and this type of thing, knowing that Jeremy Corbyn was of a politics I didn't share in terms of being further left than I thought was pragmatic. And actually, I just happened to disagree with his worldview, right? Mm. But then democracy and whatever. So effectively, I voted against Corbyn. I didn't vote for any of the other three candidates. You know, like the other three were just boring. They were just boring and dull and didn't have a vision. So, you know, I can actually understand why people voted Corbyn. Like, Corbyn came along and went, this is my vision of the world.
Exactly.
What was a New Labour vision at that point? Because all three of them were effectively New Labour. And what was that vision? That there wasn't one.
I think you've put the nail on the head. Visions win support. And that's it. I mean, Simon Sinek wrote a book, Start With Why. And he says, people don't buy what, they buy the why. And I totally agree with you. I think what became clear over that campaign is the three, others had no clarity, no alternate, no vision. Really, what it was really saying was, after all these years of New Labour, they had no answers. They were unable to articulate a vision of the Labour Party, let alone one for the country. And Corbyn, you know, I mean, let's not try and turn him into a demagogue in this way. I think this is just mistaken to do it. You have to understand what
happened. Go on, do it.
Well, look, I may disagree with him, and I profoundly disagree with many of the ideas, but the man articulated clarity of thought, right? It might have been simple, whatever, but actually it was a simple message. He was often a reaction to what was going wrong and came up with a compelling vision in that way. And I completely underestimated it. And he did appeal to many people.
Do you think he's anti-Semitic?
Okay, this is the question. I think in his eyes, I don't think he is. His vision of anti-Semitism, or as he sees it, he is very supportive of the local Jewish community in Israel. He will go to Hanukkah lightings and so forth. He will defend local communities. He will be appalled of people who throw bricks through synagogue windows or do things like this. He will be appalled at what went on with the Nazis and Auschwitz and stuff like that. He will do that. Genuinely does say that. However, he has a problem with this connection with Israel. He has a problem that sees that Jews have this connection with Israel. He sees it as a distinct issue in and of itself. And a difficulty he has with the state of Israel, which is fundamental to it, it defies all the ideas of groups which are suffering and challenged and so forth, the dispossessed in the world, because Israel's successful, because actually they're supported by American money and so forth, which goes against the imperialism idea. Never mind the Arab states are supporting, getting support from
America. I suppose that's a bit I've never quite understood, right? So I can understand going, the Palestinians have been vastly more unsuccessful than the Israelis, right? And so as a result, showing more solidarity with them. But at the same time, in Hezbollah and Hamas and all these organisations, these are organisations that are homophobic and sexist and, you know, all the isms and all the ists that have got going in a way that the Jewish community as a whole isn't. So there might be like rabbis and whatever that might be, but generally as a community, the Jewish community is pretty tolerant. I just don't understand how we can reconcile those two things.
Well, they don't reconcile it. What they do is they push aside. Like, if you're a bad scientist, you will selectively pick evidence which suits what you wish to do and push aside that doesn't. And that's what's gone on here. They've created a narrative of the world. And to fit that narrative, they have to, obviously, cut off that which is uncomfortable. So that's what many of these people who've aligned in this particular way have done. So you're absolutely correct. The fact that all those things that, you know, gays can be stoned in these countries and, you know, and women's rights are completely oppressed in this way, these are secondary and pushed sort of under the surface, where what they then try and do is pick on all the sort of things they say about Israel and the nasty things, and it's all because of this imperialistic philosophy. So it isn't robust in a way, anybody outside of it. And they, many of them who are supporters of Corbyn, exist in an echo chamber. Look, we all, to be fair, all of us to some extent, greater or lesser, create our own echo chambers. Social media creates that opportunity. But I think what's happened in the last few years, and the reason for Corbyn, the reason for Trump in America and so forth, I think the growth of social media has really, what it's done is enabled people who are perhaps on the fringes to connect in ways which was never previously possible. And I would say to you, what's happened in the Labour Party, the hard left extremists who've joined, we've got people who are former Communist Party members, people who are currently involved, who were never...
On some of them currently Communist... I thought some of them joined both, haven't they?
But these are, we've got serious people, you know, members of United Union, Andrew Murray, for instance, who's in my constituency in Southgate. He was a former member, serious member of the Communist Party, is now a leading supporter of Corbyn in this way. You've got others, you know, the Morning Star now endorses Corbyn in this way. So you've got people who are always on the fringes. They have now taken positions in local parties in there, which doesn't reflect many of those who are elected into positions. You know, many of us have faced deselection battles and so forth.
Have you?
I did. When it was up for, I was up for, we had our local elections in May, and this time last year, we were going through this sort of process. And I didn't get automatic reselected. I had to go through a process, and there was some of those in Momentum who were seeking at the time to perhaps challenge me and to put others in my place. And that failed.
Can we touch a bit on Momentum? Mm. Because I find them, I find them more interesting in terms of, for a while, I think there was this perception that Momentum were a bunch of cranks and loonies. Mm. There to support their crank and loon. You know what I mean? Like, from people who weren't in it, that was a kind of perception that it's fair to say quite a few people had. And now, you know, there was, say, the Momentum lot that were protesting against David Icke. Mm. Mm. You could argue that that's easy. Mm. I don't mind saying that David Icke is a controversial figure.
I think that's one way of putting it. I mean, yeah. I find it very hard to believe this guy used to present Grandstand, and then he starts going into shell suits and going on Terry Wogan. I mean, this guy was a crackpot, and he's now talking about, he still carries on about lizards are controlling the world and lizards are Jews. And so, right. I mean, he's bonkers. He's totally bonkers. I think anybody with any right mind would say this man's bonkers. So your point about Momentum, look, like all these things, you can't simplify these people into being all bad and the other side all good.
Right, because I know loads of people join Momentum. Absolutely. because they believe in left-wing principles.
Exactly.
And the anti-Semitism has nothing to do with it.
I think that's exactly the case. Look, there are many people, I do know people who are in parts of Momentum, and I have to say, equally say to you, some of them I can talk to very well, and I would class them as friends of people I can talk to. So I don't think it's so easy. What we do is to polarise people because of the anti-Semitism issue. They're all bad, everyone else is all good. I think it's far more complex than that. We prefer things to be black and white, but actually there's a far more grey than we'd ever like them to be. So I think that's certainly true. And they will take issues on this one. They will stand up against anti-Semitism in the way that I've defined it. And so they have a difficulty with Israel. This is the point that we struggle with. And I'm afraid over the summer, when all this stuff was kicking off in the Labour Party, there was some unpleasant stuff with some of these people were doing, which were unable to separate. This is the problem. My issue is about being left-wing or being out there is one thing. When you start idolising it against one person, and Jeremy Corbyn was becoming your god, in the same way Tony Blair, for many on the right wing, would consider as God. That's a very dangerous place to be, because what you're then doing is identifying the politics with the person. That's really bad, because if you are so tied up into that person, there's two ways it can go. That person, as we all know, is not perfect and they're going to make mistakes or they're going to get caught out in some way. Mm. You either have two choices then. If you've tied your whole politics into that person, you either then reject your total philosophy because it's around that, right? Or basically you just tie themselves into them such that you cannot see their faults. They're so perfect. So if they are found guilty of all sorts of misdemeanors, you defend them to the hilt and you rubbish everybody else as a smear. It's all nastiness. And you cut aside that which is uncomfortable.
I feel though it's everyone seems to be having a different argument. So I've had this on Facebook. So I've seen people go Zionism is racism, right? So I then go to them, what do you think Zionism means? And their definition is radically different to mine. And so I say to them, well, what's the difference in your eyes between being a Zionist, being pro-Israeli, or being supportive of the Israeli government? And I find there hasn't been that navel-gazing in the far left because it's not for them to navel-gaze on, right? So they just have these sound bites. They don't necessarily think that, you know, you have a look at, I think it was Yachad when they conducted that poll, said something like 90% of British Jews are both supportive of Israel and against settlement expansion.
Yeah. And support boycott, divestment and sanctions, which is interesting.
Do they?
No, well, that's you quoted that poll. That a Momentum supporter in Southgate often quotes this Yachad poll and says, look, he says 25% of Jews believe that some sanctions against Israel will be used. Now I say to him, no, look, you want to take this unit, we need to look at the basis of the poll, who's conducting the poll. I said the Jewish Policy Research Unit is probably more of an accurate polling, but I say they selectively pick those sorts of things out and they will draw it in a particular intentional way. But I find the interesting thing is, as I said, the way they've gone about this way, you know, people got themselves into their comfort zone and they're unable to see another side. So you end up, this is why your Jewish Voice for Labour is a reaction to how can we defend that we're not anti-Semites. So this group has been formed, which is most of the people who have them, which are a handful, have no real connection with the Jewish community, have never had a real connection. And in the few that have, many of them have disassociated themselves to try and say, look, we do like the Jews, we just don't accept Israel. See, you can be a Jew and hate Israel. See, we're okay, we're justified. So you create this idea in this way. When I had this on the Facebook forums of our party, where a handful of people were looking like, the whole lot think like this, but it was just a few people engaging. What they're really saying is, you know, when you
good
say,
Jews and bad Jews.
What I try to say, who am I, as in to speak? I said, well, I think I can because actually my views are represented by the vast majority. I said, let me say this about Jewish Voice of Labour. They're not just a minority group in the way you're trying to balance it up on the scales. They're a statistical anomaly. They don't even make up sufficient to be. It's a bit like giving a platform to the Flat Earth Society to discuss science. It is so preposterous as to give them equal weighting. And this is why I refused. I mean, Southgate CLP was trying to bring in the JVL to have a discussion last month, and it was pulled at the end. We were promising protests and so forth. Because I think once you legitimise these groups in that way, you're getting yourself, it's like sharing a platform with David Irving about Holocaust denial. Once you start giving legitimization to certain people which have got views which are so abhorrent, so false, so flawed, the whole nature of debate gets completely distorted.
So at what point would you say, I can't be in the party anymore, I've got to go?
Look, that's a great question. You asked me earlier about Jeremy Corbyn and where he goes from. Right? Look, I think he's peaked. I think in 2017 was his peak. I think he's now on the downward side. That's not to say that there's an alternative which is so obvious and so clear-cut, because I don't think there is. Look, we're in a very unpredictable era. But you're asking me about where it is. Look, how can people vote Labour? Look, I say to you...
No, that's not the question I asked. The question I asked is...
At what point do I walk away?
Yes.
At what point do you walk away? It's a great question. What I say to you is this. What people need to understand is I'm a local councillor. And I'm involved in local politics. Jeremy Corbyn doesn't tell me what to do, right? He doesn't run the council. We have an elected council in its own right. We have a leader of the council. I'm deputy leader of the council. And we are responsible locally for implementing policies, which are, I call like local politics, it's like a franchise. It's a franchise of the national picture, right? So you have, that's why you have good councils and bad councils of all political colours. Because effectively, we're not all following the same direct policies. You know, you have good, you know, good Labour councils, bad Labour councils, good Tories, bad Tories, and all sorts of things in between. Okay, we have different ways or philosophies, it's true. But the day-to-day stuff, you know, is generally down to the practicalities.
Can I ask, is there much difference between a Labour, Lib Dem or Tory council as opposed to a...
I think the issue is There can be. There are, again, come back to the point, there are good councils and bad councils. It really depends how dogma-driven they are and how basically that implies itself. But we have certain principles which we keep referring back to that we will not go down and will not do. With certain things in this way, we do keep working on it. But again, how it actions itself is very much down to the people you've got in your councils, how effective they are at doing with the basics. Local government is about dealing with the services that most people are interested in, how your bins are being emptied, how your roads are being swept, the sorts of state of your libraries, but also the other areas which are becoming much more of a challenge, social care, children's services. And when you've got lesser budgets to actually facilitate that, those are where the challenges come. So in answer to your question, which is what you asked me, I'm trying to do a politician, not being a politician, trying to answer your question and diverting the question, but is this, what did you walk away? I think the issue is this, while I can still make a difference, can you make a difference in a tangible, practical way? I've not encountered an issue within the council of a problem for me as a Jew be in that way.
So can I ask, do you wear a kippah out and about?
I do. Okay. I do. And I've not encountered that problem. It's not an issue in that way. So the issue for me is I'm deputy leader of a council. So people say to me, how can you still be a member of the Labour Party? My answer is, well, okay, let's try and understand it. You want me and others like me to walk away, to be taken over by others who probably may have a very different view. How will that help the community? How does that help any of us in that way? To me, it's pretty stupid, right? So I think there is an issue locally as opposed to what there is nationally. I think on a national issue, it's certainly true that many will argue, vote for me, I'm not a Corbyn supporter, but vote for me to become your MP. People will rightly say, but if I do get a number of you, Jeremy Corbyn will become Prime Minister. So why am I going to support you in that way? And it's very difficult to say, well, we won't allow it to get to where it is. But the argument is, well, you can't control him now. Why are you going to control him when you're in? You know? It is a problem. I accept that. But I think things are going to change. I'll give you my prophetic ideas. I actually think Corbyn will not win an election. I don't think the left will win an election because I just don't think they will win the shires. I don't think they've maxed out to what they can conceivably do. But the problem,
I talk about little Norma Smith that lives in the middle of Norwich. Who's little Norma Smith that lives in the middle of Norwich? Who's she going to vote for? It'd be Theresa May.
Yeah, I think it will be. I think many people look. But by the same token, if the future for Labour is this, who's the alternative? Right? Again, it's vision wins over. And for all these faults, you know, it's more than just Corbyn. So get rid of Corbyn and be okay. No, it's unfair to blame it on one person. He, for whatever you think of him, he didn't get there on his own. There are many people around him. What are they holding? Where are they going? And the trouble I have for those on the right of the party, look, when he was challenged in a year later by Owen Smith, right? We had that infamous challenge. Remember, after 2 days after the Brexit vote we had, They all resigned en masse. Remember that famous Sunday? And I
would just like to clarify for listeners, the reason why I went, was just because...
Owen Smith.
Owen Smith, again, just doesn't... Not inspirational.
Well, that's my point. I'm saying to you is, Owen, nobody's ever heard of Smith. And my question is, at that time, they all resigned en masse. I thought at the time, someone like Hilary Bend, someone with substance, was going to come forward and say, I'm going to challenge Jeremy Corbyn, and this is why I'm going to challenge him. This is my policy.
Even Chukka.
Yeah.
Chukka Ramuna.
They've all had a lot to say and they've done nothing. They've failed, right? If he was the best they could do. Look, I spot my ballot paper when it had the one thing. I couldn't vote for Jeremy, but I certainly couldn't vote for Owen Smith. I thought, this is just a farce. You know, this is a farce. The question is, politics is about pragmatism, right? There's too much ideology. There's too much for things out there what like it to be. As we know, as a kid, when your mummy tells you can't have it, you can't have it. There's no point shouting around screaming and saying, can't have it. You don't. You just have to say, we lost. So I say to you, in politics, we've had 2.5 years of stagnation because nobody anywhere has articulated a vision for this country. And that's the challenge what we need to see from all of them. And on the left in particular, if they don't come up with a vision, Labour will be in opposition for an extremely long time.
I want to get back onto Jewish stuff.
Okay.
How does your Judaism affect your politics?
Yeah, it does affect my politics. Look, I am openly Jewish in this way. in a sense of how does it affect my politics? Look, I use, we've just finished reading the part of the book of Bereshit, Genesis. And the role model for politics is Joseph. Joseph is the model of going out in the outside world and impacting into the world in this way. So it's an extremely good role model. For that, in that way, I think that's what I would utilise as the ideal. The other thing, the lesson in politics is this:
so you advocate for brothers putting their youngest brother into slavery. Is that the official line of the deputy leader of Enfield Council?
Absolutely, a sell off it to slavery, and absolutely, and being challenged with Potiphar's wife. Look, effectively, it's not a perfect model. Hayden. Okay, just clarify. But I do find it a very, there's many things you can find in tourist sources about how you should behave, how you should seek to be. My issue is about, again, not trying to impose your view of society. We're an open society. The Labour Party endorses all, you know, a whole range of different ideas in this way. And you have to be accepting of all people. You can't impose negativity and things. So I try and treat people as fairly. I look at the issue as everybody, treat them all the same. We're all part of a community, Jews, Christians, non-Jews, whatever. We're an open, tolerant society. We have to try and accommodate people in that way. And I find myself...
Do you think we are an open and tolerant society?
We are. Yes. We are. Whoa. We don't think... Well, I think we try to be. We try and create that. I think there are good people. Look, in spite of what you read in the media, there are good people. There are good people from all communities that work together. And it works very well in my borough. And we have very good communal relationships. So I think that's a tremendous positive. So I seek to try and do that. But I'm also, look, I have no illusions of grandeur. The other thing I say about the lesson you learn from the past.
So no Prime Minister Anderson.
I have no intention of going into national politics. Frankly, I have more power doing my role than many MPs have. A backbencher, what the heck do they have? I can actually make a difference. We have a £1 billion responsibility.
You know, well, let's be fair, £1 billion is going to be worth about fiver in about a year.
Okay, here we go. But the fact of it is, it's big challenges we have to make. But I've done things. You know, I was cabinet member for environment. I'm responsible for a mayor-funded £42 million cycle scheme. Mayor of London's funded this programme. Very contentious. Some people love it, some people hate it, you know, whatever, that's fine. Actually making big changes to the area, improving the look and feel. Sustainable drainage programmes. We're one of the leading parties in delivering in this, one of the leading councils, both in this country and abroad, at delivering those sorts of projects. So we've done some tremendous programmes which make a real difference to the people. And that, to me, is the legacy that you have. But I also was going to say that I also know, looking at the Parsha and looking at what's going on, we know in the Parsha to come, Shemot, it says a new pharaoh arose over Egypt that didn't know Joseph. And the lesson to that is, once you're gone, you're either forgotten or you're blamed. And that's something that I think we always have to keep in mind. You know, I have no, illusions. One minute you're up here, one minute you're down there. And that's fine. That's
so
the way
it is. Will you be forgotten or blamed?
On the cycle scheme, I think the people who say like me, they won't forget me. Well, they say, well, it's a great scheme. They might forget me personally. That's fine. The people who hate me say that blooming Anderson is his blooming scheme. Look at him. So, I mean, whatever. But I think I heard the chief rabbi earlier speaking, and he talked about leadership. If everybody loves you, you can't be doing anything. And if they all hate you, well, he says, then you're not a mensch. But he says it's getting somewhere in between. The fact of it is, you're going to break. Can't make an omelette without breaking some eggs. You have to, if you get things done, certain people are going to like what you do, certain people are not going to like what you do. So you've got to have that realisation. If you can't take the flak, then effectively things aren't going to work out.
So if there's someone who wants to get into politics and they're a member of the Jewish community, what would you say to them?
We have a tremendous heritage of social activism. I mean, Avi Weiss, a rabbi in America, wrote a book, Spiritual Activism. Yeah, it's quite interesting. He's an interesting figure. But we have a tremendous example over the years of Jews who've been involved in political life. I said Joseph biblically, but over the years, you've had many, many different people across the world who've been involved in social activism in this way. It's in our DNA. And I think basically, you shouldn't just sit home. If you've got a problem, I like Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And one of these 7 habits is, he talks about circles of influence and circles of concern. People who spend their time shouting at televisions or going on protest work but don't actually do anything in a practical sense are socials of concern. The fact is, I cannot change the problems in the Sudan, right? I can't from here anyway. If I wish to make that difference, I have to get involved in a group that goes out there and tries to make a big difference in that way. And many people are social concern. They watch on the television, it concerns them, but they don't do anything. They don't give the charity, they just do about it. They shout about it, scream about it, can't do anything.
So the moral is, do something.
The circles of influence are about the things that you can personally involve yourself in. What can you do? What's your particular interest? And go and make it so. Stop talking about it. Get off your tuchus and get out there and try and make a difference in whichever way you can. You'll find your path. You will do it. So I'm much more interested in people who do than people who just talk about doing. And that's my lesson to all everyone. If everyone's out there, please go and do it. If you want to get involved in politics, join your local party, preferably the Labour Party, but that's your choice. Hey, that's the way I would suggest anyway.
Daniel Anderson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. And that's it. Until next time, bagelers.